I used to hear it being talked about, the Owyhee Project. The first I ever became in any way involved in it was when Carl Mundt was getting it authorized. And it was basically his office doing it. But it was, Mundt was a senior Republican in the House, in the Senate. He was senior Republican on government operations, and he was one of the senior Republicans on appropriations. And this was just a pork barrel project for his home state. At the same time, George McGovern was building his credentials, and he was working on it in the Senate side. I mean, it was, the two of them were a formidable group. I didn't really have much of a perception. I just, mm-hmm. It's something I always heard about on the news as the Owyhee Project.
Mm-hmm. How about as time passed and as you learned more about it, you became more prominent public official?
I really got involved in it as I can't remember if it was the year I worked in the Attorney General's office, because I was really on the prosecution side, chief of litigation. But it was evolutionary. It was during that period of time, and as I became Attorney General, running for Attorney General, I, like everybody else, took the position that it was, that South Dakota had this coming to us. Bob Neufeld worked for me, and Bob always had a real interest in water. At that time, I can't honestly say that I did. And Bob, I hired Bob to handle all the environmental law that the Attorney General deals with. And he was my he and Larry Kite were my two environmental specialists, and they were assigned. As a matter of fact, I think they worked full-time out of Vern Butler's office, or Environmental Protection's office, but Dick Knipe had Environmental Protection in one agency and Natural Resources in another one. And there was friction going on between Alan Lochner on the one hand and Vern Butler on the other hand. The perception was that Vern Butler was totally for anything that any of the water type people wanted to do, and that Alan Lochner, I hate to tag him wrong because that's how I remember it, but Alan Lochner was much more of a foot dragger in concern about environmental things. And then they had the Game Fish and Parks Department that was also becoming involved in it. I mean, Knipe had real turmoil in his administration over it, but I was the Attorney General that provided the legal work to all three agencies, so we ended up getting in the middle of it. And more I just became involved in it that way. I mean, it was kind of just an evolutionary thing. But I finally came to the position that South Dakota had really lost something of real value when we lost that the flood control projects in 1944 had in fact brought great benefit to South Dakota. They had brought low-cost electricity, a stable supply of low-cost electricity, very significant construction projects in the state, though, you know, which are of a temporary nature, but it had brought, but the flooding problems were not historically a South Dakota problem. It was the Sioux Cities, the Kansas Cities, the St. Louis's, the Omaha's, the Nebraska City, Nebraska's, the Council Bluffs that historically had flooded once it all got out of South Dakota. We didn't have any major cities along the Missouri to worry about. And we had suffered some real damage. It had virtually destroyed the lower Brule and Crow Creek Indian Reservations. Lower Brule and Crow Creek had really suffered damage. And as an Indian lawyer, and having been involved with those tribes, I mean, I was aware of the mess that had been created, especially on the Crow Creek side of the river. They had taken what was the historical town site for the Indians, moved them up onto a new piece of land, built what they felt was a modern community, took Indian houses where Indians used to live. Oh, they had a lot of space between their houses, and put them all together in tract home projects, and just created a mess. The same thing was true on Cheyenne River. Moved them west away from the river all the way over to Eagle Butte. I mean, the town of Pollock disappeared. we just had a lot of problems. And I felt that I became convinced that we were one of those, I became one of those that said that we'd never gotten our fair share payment and we were entitled to it.
Mm-hmm. Oahu was seen as a way of being compensated.
Yeah, there wasn't anything else that I even knew of at that point in time. I mean, they're just, that was, during the years I was Attorney General in the 70s, that was the issue in South Dakota. I remember Knipe at one point made a State of the State address where he stood up and talked about, these are good people on this side, and these are good people on this side, and we have to come together. And they got into a fight over whether or not drainage tiles were going to be needed, and how much salt content the water had, and how much salt it would put in the soils, and whether or not you could drain the soils. And it was just, there is, I am convinced that there's no project in America, a water project, that could have made it at that point in time. I mean, that's about the time when America, especially in the West, their attitudes change. It used to be development at all costs. They didn't care where they had to pump the water, whether it was central Nebraska, the high plains of Kansas, the desert of Utah, or Idaho. Pump the water and turn it green. And it was this time that all these environmental concerns came into play in America. The salinity from the Colorado River down along the Rio Grande and all those stories of turning it into a vast salt desert after irrigating all those years. When you listen to the arguments, they weren't without logic, and it isn't that they didn't make sense. Because they did make sense. I mean, the tragic thing is, Oahu would have been a good thing for South Dakota. I'll always believe that. Economically, it would have been a very, very good thing. But at the same point in time, it would never have been cost effective. America, it would have been like a lot of programs where you put more money into it. I mean, all those cost benefit ratios were a joke. You would have put more money into it than you would get out of it. But the impact on what it would have done, it would have cost the federal treasury substantially more than it would ever gain. But the other side of it is, it would have done an awful lot to have turned around a declining rural economy in that area. I do believe that. The main streets of the Redfields, you know, and the Ipswiches and the Grotons and what have you, those kinds of communities would be different today if they had water development. And it really would be. It would not have been a cost-effective thing for America, but it clearly would have been a cost-effective thing for South Dakota. I talked to Guy Martin, and he flat told me there would be no funding for any new water projects, period. And that included Oahu, even though they'd spent some money on it. He said, I'm not going to admit it publicly, but the project's not going to happen, and none of those, this hit list of 13 or whatever it was, he said, it's really bigger than that. There will be no more projects funded. I mean, that's at the same time that America was changing. I mean, it was changing nationally, it was changing in South Dakota, it was changing regionally, it was, and you won't see that anymore. You'll never again see it as long as you live in this country.
You called Guy Martin because you were reacting to the hit list.
Yeah, I was trying to get, at that time, I was, at that time, I think it would be fair to say I was a proponent of the Oahu Project.
By the time you'd become governor?
Or even before that. Even before that. I talked to Guy Martin when I was Attorney General.
Oh, okay.
If that was Guy Martin, whoever, Jimmy Carter took office in 78.
76.
In 76.
So you still were Attorney General.
I was Attorney General all the years. Reagan became, I took office of governor January 79. Mm-hmm. I won in the 78 election and Reagan won in the 80 election. Right. So I had 2 years of Carter as Attorney General. That's when I talked about all that water stuff with. By the time I became governor, there was no dealing with the Carter administration on water. I mean, they were casting concrete.
you never met with the Carter officials, tried to reverse their positions on Oahu?
Not after I was governor. I don't believe I ever did. Somebody, Neufeld, those guys might have, but I don't recall that, and I never did. They did. They wouldn't budge. By 1980, I knew Oahu was dead. I mean, by the time I got into the governor's office, I knew Oahu wasn't going anyplace.
Gary Crothers wanted to deauthorize Oahu. I told him I'd trade him. I mean, I was just very blunt with him in my meetings in Washington. I'd trade him other water projects for deauthorizing Oahu, but it had to include water in there. It had to include Sendak as part of it. And we did make a deal on that. I mean, I did make a deal with the administration on that, that they would, that became Lake Andes Wagner and Sendak and the Garrison Extension and Webb. See, Watt knew this area. Damn it, Watt really knew. Like he said to us one time at the meeting, I want to tell you guys something. You're going to get something done with us or you're never going to get anything done. Because I'll be the last Secretary of Interior in the history of the United States that even knows who the hell Pick and Sloan were. My family lost their farm on the Pick Sloan project in Wyoming. And he said, our family farm was taken for Pick Sloan purposes. And he said, I understand what's going on. I mean, Watt really knew. I mean, he wasn't dumb. He was a strident son of a gun, but he was very, very bright. And he really knew the whole Flood Control Act of 44. And I mean, he knew who Pick was, and one was in the Corps of Engineers or something, and the other worked for the Department of the Army and the Reclamation. And they had these competing ideas, and they put their plan together. And I mean, Watt knew all that. And he said, you're going to get it done with me or never. And I'm for you. One committee of the House deals with water development, and the other deals with water with domestic water, and one deals with irrigation water, if I can call it that. Sidney Yates is chairman of the one that deals with cities. I don't know, what's his committee? Sidney Yates, I think he's from Chicago, was for one kind. And Webb was not the kind that belonged in the, what I'll call the farmers projects. It didn't belong in the water, in the 13 kinds of hit list projects. It belonged in the other one. And he said, no way in hell is that coming through my committee. That doesn't belong in my committee. So I had worked out, Clint didn't even know I was doing all this stuff. Nobody knew that I was meeting with the department in private. I had all these secret meetings I was doing. At that time, I was negotiating that scene, and I was working on this stuff with Washington. And I was talking about deauthorization and trading, you know, so we didn't just have an outright deauthorization and what to trade for. And Webb got into the picture. And we set up a meeting in Washington. And I had never been historically a Webb backer. I really had not been. I didn't think it was appropriate to trade that for water development. I was a Webb backer for water delivery for domestic purposes, but not for what John C. was wanting to trade it for. Because at that time, I think that the sub-district had come up with a whole set of plans on all these projects they'd support in return for trading off the lot. And at that time, we were building water projects all over South Dakota, Kingbrook, and, you know, working on Clark Rural and Lincoln Rural and Clay Union and Webb. And Webb was so big it wasn't feasible without basically federal grants. The rest of them needed those low-interest loans. So I'm just trying to think of how the hell we got around to the position that we got around to, and I can't remember. But I had a meeting actually set up in Washington, and I honestly can't remember how and why we did it right now, to consummate this deal. And then by this time, Clint was rolling into this election cycle of his, and I thought, this is a way to help Clint. I knew South Dakota was going down to one congressman. I was going to help Clint on the election. We had the meeting in Washington, and the Watt people, I think it was Crothers and Broadbent, those people were adamant that Sidney Yates would not let Webb go through his and see, I wanted Webb, but I didn't want Webb to be one of the trade-offs for Oahe. I mean, I wanted things like Greg Roos, Hilltop Heights, Sendak, Lake Andes, Wagner, those kinds of things. But I didn't want it to be a trade.
You didn't want Webb to be part of the trade at all.
No, I didn't. I didn't, because I felt that we had an entitlement to something like Webb through the kinds of programs and Farmers Home Administration that delivers water to everybody. But it shouldn't come out of our allocation for a water project, for the payback of the hundreds of thousands of acres on fixed loan. I mean, I really didn't think that that was appropriate. And so we set up the meeting, and Crothers and Watt were adamant that Sidney Yates couldn't get it through his committee. Absolutely wouldn't let it through his committee. So I know what it was. Aside from the trade-offs on all this, I can remember now. Aside from the trade-offs on all that, I was still pushing Webb to those guys, but not as part of the trade-off. I said, damn it, you guys, you know, we got an election coming up, and you know, you guys aren't being very helpful, and we carried water. I campaigned for Reagan and did all these things for Reagan, and what, damn you, every time the Sandy Van Okers of this world attack you, I'm the guy that stands up. Everybody else claps. I'm the guy that stands up and defends you on your integrity and your honor. And by God, I'm not asking you for anything that we're not entitled to. You could come take care of us on this, and I'm explaining to him how bad the water is and everything, but I don't want it to be the trade-off on Hawaii. I want it independent. So they finally agree they'll support it, but it can't get through the House. They said, you're never going to get it. I said, look, if you guys will come aboard with it, then you know, let Daschle worry about the Democrats. But by God, at least I can say you Republicans have delivered on this. So, I mean, after a lot of argument and discussion, they agree with that. And the only reason they agree with me is because they know Sidney Yates will not let it through the House of Representatives. I mean, Daschle had been trying for whatever period of time to run up this flag. It wasn't going anyplace in the House. So they agreed that they would do it only because they knew it couldn't pass. And so I decided, aha, here's a chance for Clint Roberts to look good politically. So we structure it so Clint's going to take credit for all this strong position of the administration for Webb, which we wanted anyhow, but we didn't want it to be the trade. That's what it was. We have the meeting in Washington. We meet in the catacombs of the Capitol. Everybody's there: Pressler, Abner, Daschle, Janklow, Roberts, and the federal people. In comes Jim Watt. And we sit down and we have this meeting and we're discussing all this stuff about Webb. Watt says, I want to tell you, Tom, or tells all of us, after having listened to all this, I want to tell you the administration supports Webb. I mean, all these guys dropped their jaws. We strongly support it. This is something that ought to be built, should be built, and we're behind it. As tough as the budget is, we're behind this. We will do everything we can, and if it gets on the president's desk, we'll sign it. But as you know, since it involves an appropriation, it has to originate in the House, and the House of Representatives, Tom, is your party. And I was surprised because he didn't call him Congressman or Mr., he called him Tom. And I was really kind of surprised at that because they're so deferential in Washington to all those phony titles that we don't care about out here. And he kept saying, and he was pretty hard on him. He says, now I want to tell you, Tom, we support this hook, line, and sinker, and if it doesn't go,
It's because you can't get it through the House of Representatives and Sidney Yates. Tom, it's up to you. Tom doesn't say a word. He just sits there going, very polite, just nodding his head up and down. Tom went and got the support, and it didn't take him long. I mean, I just think he went over there and said, look, it's my turn. You guys owe this to me. We're going from two congressmen to one. He did what I did. We're going from two congressmen to one, and by God, I got to have something to run on. I can't be an impotent guy, and besides that, I'm born and raised up here. This is my home area. You know, I'm a Dassel from around Brown and Edmonds County, and by God, Sidney, this, you know, $100 million is nothing to the federal treasury. They spend $1 billion every 10 hours, around the clock, 365 days a year. And Tom just went and, I mean, he pulled it off. So then Carruthers and those guys insisted that it be made part of the package, because they didn't really want to write an open check to South Dakota, so they want to include everything in it.
Well, you mentioned that you weren't a big supporter of Webb early on.
I wasn't, because I never, ever, 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 ever.
What sold you on Webb?
My becoming aware of how bad water quality was in South Dakota. I mean, I just didn't know that. I'm born and raised in Flander. Water just bubbles out of the ground up there. I mean, I lived down in Mission. We didn't have any water problem in Michigan. Down in Mission, I lived in Vermilion. I lived on the Rosebud Indian Reservation. We had sub-irrigated grounds, they call it, where water actually percolated up out of the ground every spring. But outside of that, I had no perception of water problems in the state. And I just never felt that there was any need for all these domestic pipelines. Once I became governor, it was a whole different story. I mean, and I pushed that. I gave over half my block grant money to all those rural water systems over the years. I mean, a lot of it. Millions.
Did you feel that you'd lost when they included Webb in a settlement package?
No. No. I wanted Webb. By that time, I was really a supporter of Webb. That wasn't,
I mean, as far as it getting funding on its own.
Believing in Webb wasn't political on my part. Structuring the credit was. I mean, that was political, and I'm just very straight with that. But when I was arguing for Webb in Washington, I believed in Webb. I mean, I really wanted it as, you know, that we had to have that, and you guys owed it to us, politically owed it to us. If I can't sell you on the merits of good water, let me sell you on a political argument. That's the one I used.
I mean, as far as Webb being included in the settlement bill.
No, because I thought, I never ever admitted it to them, but I felt anything we got, because the settlement bill never meant anything to me, honestly, because that project was not going to be built.
Mm-hmm. It,
by the time we got around to that, we had no congressional support, we didn't have majority South Dakota support. America was running $200 billion a year deficits. By that time, we were almost $2 trillion in debt. There was no, this guy named Miller was moving up to become chairman of the House committee. We had no support. We were down to Jim Abner pushing water in Congress. And I mean, I honestly knew, I had become politically astute enough over the years to know this was a dead issue for South Dakota. So let's talk tough, but let's cut the best deal we can cut.